You are listening to KDUCK's Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUCK's Richland College or the DCCD. Today, unlike yesterday, will be a very short program. I've had business to take care of, so we're starting much later than we usually do. And I'm going to mention, and mention is probably the operative word here, something that is in the news that's getting a lot more attention since the Olympics are over, and that is the situation in the Ukraine, where Russia, which borders right on Ukraine is just west. And I have a map, and I need to probably mention this right at the top. The way you listen to the Pronk Pop Show is go to pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops, pronkpops.wordpress.com. At the very top, you'll have links to all my shows. At the very top, you'll have the most recent shows, and below it, you'll have a complete archive of all my shows. But for every show, what I do is provide my listeners with additional information, and that consists of both graphics, maps, which I have maps today because most people don't really know where the Ukraine is, although it's close to Russia. And where does it border? It borders on the Black Sea. And one of the reasons the Russians are very interested in this, they have their Black Sea fleet headquartered, or the port is in Sebastopol, which is on the Crimean Peninsula. So I provide that information. So if you're not really familiar where the Ukraine is, may I suggest you go to my site, and right under the links to where you go to listen to it, you'll find additional information as well as videos related to the stories that I'll be covering. And I'm really going to cover two stories, but this one will be far the shortest. The question I asked myself, and I think many Americans are saying, what, if anything, should the United States do? And my answer is simple, absolutely nothing. Ukraine economy is really a basket case. It has two ways to go. It can either remain tied to Russia. Right now, it's an independent nation. The dictator that was elected, though, has fled to Moscow and is in Moscow. And what Russia is doing right now is alerting and putting on a military exercise right along the border with Ukraine. And remember, they also have their Black Sea fleet. That's obviously in the Black Sea, which is south of Ukraine. But their port is, and they lease a port from Ukraine. So the Ukraine has always been closely allied since it was annexed by the Soviet Union. However, when the Soviet Union broke up, Ukraine, amongst other republics in the Soviet Union, went their separate ways. And many in the Ukraine want to be associated with the European Union. And I think that's probably the majority. So there was a lot of unrest because what the current dictator, who since fled, wanted to do is keep the alliance strong between the Ukraine and Russia. That said, in that background, what is the role, if any, of the United States? I would say zero. We shouldn't risk one U.S. military personnel, whether it's Air Force, Navy, or Marines, in this at all. This is really between Russia and the Ukraine to settle. And if Europe wants to get involved, that's fine. But we have no horse in this race. And you always have to go back. Whether you like it or not, this was a democratic elected president of the Ukraine that fled. He wasn't popular, and he was overthrown, and he did flee the country. But he had a strong... He favors the Russians. Most Ukrainians, not all of them, want to be more allied with Europe. And because of the government is really running massive deficits, they are a basket case. So all they're really looking is have their hands out, whether it's from Europe or the United States through the IMF, the International Monetary Fund. They're looking for money. They're looking for a bailout. And what I am totally against is government intervention, both in the U.S. economy and abroad. And this is a perfect example where we should just stay out and mind our own business and don't provide any resources. We have our own problems. We're not going to add to our deficit by providing funding for the Ukrainian government. They're on their own. And if they want to be associated with the European Union, they're free to do so. And they're going to need to work out some kind of relationship with Russia, because Ukraine is right on the border with Russia, because the Black Sea, so you get a picture. You have Turkey, and right north of Turkey, you have the Black Sea. And north of the Black Sea, on one side, you have Russia. On the other side, you have the Ukraine. And south of the Ukraine, you have Romania. And at the far western Ukraine, you have Poland. And on the north, you have Belarus. So that geographically places the nation. So you can see why there's always been a close relationship between Russia and the Ukraine. We should not be intervening. We shouldn't be spending U.S. taxpayer money, nor put U.S. troops in harm's way in this dust-up in the Ukraine. So the Ukraine situation is getting a lot of attention, a lot of news, but for American people, they should say, don't look to us. If Ukraine wants to go to the United Nations or Europe, be my guest. The problem you have there with the United Nations, Russia's part permanent member of the Security Council, so it's going to veto anything that it doesn't like. Now, I got a really laugh when Hegel urges Russia to act cautiously in the Ukraine, and they need to act transparently. And that's what I really got a chuckle out of. Yeah, like the Obama administration promised to be transparent and their most opaque administration that we've had in decades. So it's kind of ridiculous for the Secretary of Defense to tell Russia it should be transparent. You got to put yourself in the position of Russia. We don't like it when Russia intervenes in Cuba, which they did. And we had the Cuban Missile Crisis under Kennedy. This is the same situation. The Ukraine, at that time, the Ukraine was part of the Soviet Union. And where did the United States have missiles? And most of you are probably not aware of this. The deal was the Russians would take out the missiles that they put in Cuba. After several months, take out the missiles in Turkey. That was the deal that resolved the so-called missile October missile crisis in 1962. Most Americans, unless you study history, are simply not aware of that. It's not like Kennedy sweet-talked the Russians to turn around. We gave him an ultimatum that if the Russians or the Soviet Union continued to send the missiles into Cuba, we were going to enforce a quarantine. And fortunately, the world averted a potential nuclear war. That was probably the one time in U.S. history that we were on the brink of a nuclear war. It was that serious. And the Russians blinked and they turned around. They really shouldn't have been pulling what they were doing. And they were caught at it. And their bluff was called. But a deal was cut. Not well known, but what happened is we did have some missiles stationed in Turkey, and we agreed to pull those missiles out because Turkey is right borders on the Black Sea, which is right next to Russia, and Russia has always had a naval presence in the Black Sea, and Turkey is part of NATO, but Turkey has never been granted admission into the European Union. And there are reasons, long historical reasons for that. And I don't think really the Ukraine is going to be admitted into the European Union. I think what's going on is the Ukrainian people don't want to go back to the previous situation where they were depended on and really ruled by the Russians. And you have, in certain parts of the Ukraine, you have a lot of Russians, Russian-speaking people. Yeah, many languages spoken, but and that's the point. It's in the Crimea area and in the port of Sebastopol that the actual port facility is at. So we're going to hear more and more every day on the Ukraine situation. I'm against government intervention abroad by the U.S. government, and this is a perfect example of a situation that in the past, we have been sucked into these kind of situations. We shouldn't be. It's none of our business. We should mind our business. And I think the only avenue open to the Ukrainian people is Europe, Western Europe, as well as the United Nations. But where's the military? I don't think Germany, I don't think Poland or France is going to send troops to the Ukraine if Russia should intervene. Now, I think a lot of this is just a dust-up. I really don't think Russia's going to send troops in the Ukraine, but they are going to run military exercises, and that is getting a lot of press attention, probably more than, I won't say more than it deserves. I think it should definitely be covered. But what's the extreme position? Russia goes in and supports the existing democratically elected president of the Ukraine, and he comes back. Then you're going to have a civil war, and that's what's going to happen. All nations have a sphere of influence. In Russia's case, the Ukraine is part of that sphere. Doesn't mean I agree with it, but that's just reality, as was Central and Latin America, part of a sphere of influence of the United States. You see, the United States is an empire, or the current terminology is a hegemon. We're the only superpower. The problem with being an empire, it costs a lot of money in terms of military spending. And we have bases all over the world, several hundred bases all over the world. Now, not all of them have troops, but we still have troops in Germany, we still have troops in Japan, and we still have troops in South Korea. As far as I'm concerned, World War II was over 68 years ago. It's about time that all the troops come home from Germany, Japan, and South Korea, as well as the ones we have in the Middle East. But that's what happens when you have an empire. You need a large military establishment that requires manpower, that requires weapons. And when we had a Cold War, I'm still for a strong defense. What I'm not for is the United States being policeman of the world and intervening in nation after nation and having bases all around the globe. That only invites more intervention, because if you have the capability, doesn't mean you should use it, but there's a great temptation to use it. And our troops, the men and women, have been at war for over 12 years. It's time to bring them home. It's time to have them have some rest and relaxation and give them a parade and then get back to business of training for future wars, but not intervening. And that's really the problem we faced. But every day, every week, every month, every year, there is always going to be something going on in one or more countries in the world where there'll be a great temptation to intervene. The United States is not policeman of the world. Some want us to be policeman of the world. Some are for government intervention. They're for nation building. They're for building democracies. That is not the role of the United States government. It should not be the role. And we don't do a very good job of it. Invariably, what happens, thousands or more Americans get killed, many more, hundreds of thousands get wounded, and after we do leave, what happens? They revert back to the state prior to our intervention. That's what we're seeing in Iraq. That's what we're seeing in Afghanistan. We could be sending troops today in half a dozen countries. Fortunately, we're not, but we were on a brink of another war, and I thought a World War III, quite frankly, in Syria, when there was no good side. There's no side to be on in Syria. I'm not for the current regime or the rebels. They're both bad options. But I truly thought, Obama thought, because of the success or apparent success at the time of Libya, that this was going to be very easy. Well, it's not very easy, because what you're going to run up in Syria, as well as other country, is a determined opposition. They're not going to roll over and play dead. They're not going to take the nearest airline and flee the country. There are obviously people in the world that do have backbone and are not going to fear and tremble and quiver at the first sign of the United States indicating they're going to intervene. They're just not going to do it. And that's the problem. And no one appointed us policemen of the world. There are a lot of neoconservatives in the Republican Party that are for government intervention abroad. I call them warmongers. They call me isolationist. I'm not an isolationist. I'm for free trade. I think the United States should be involved in the world, but involvement is not intervening in country after country. It does not mean, which it does today, having base after base after base throughout the world. And that's the exact situation we are today. And the problem is we're simply out of money, out of money. And about 19% of the total budget today is military spending. And when you factor in intelligence and homeland security, more than 20% of our budget goes to national security. That's going to be cut, needs to be cut. But in terms of discretionary spending, between 45 and 50% is on national defense. And that should be the primary function of the federal government. So why the wind down of the wars, both in Iraq and Afghanistan, will result in cuts in the force levels and spending on the military, which happens after every war, it's not new, we're still going to be spending more money on military spending than the next 14 to 15 or 16 countries. We are big spenders, and if you add up all the world's spending on military, about 45% is due to the United States alone, even after these cutbacks. So that's one of the reasons I went into the Monday on the story about the cutbacks in military spending. Because what people are going to say, well, if a crisis develops in the Ukraine, we need to have several divisions ready. We're going to intervene right next to Russia? Are you out of your mind? But there are some people who will advocate that. We'll advocate that and favor it. You need to have some real politic here. You need to have some realism. You need to look at the map. You need to look at the supply lines, the logistics. So I'm cautioning the president and Secretary Hagel, stay out. I'm sure they've already heard that from the military chiefs, the Joint Chiefs of Staff. This is simply not our fight. Now, the other story that I was going to at least touch on, and I don't have much time, but I'll at least try to highlight it. And this is something that was in the news a couple of weeks ago, but I wanted to wait and see what the reaction was. And I'm sort of glad I did. There was a chart showing, comparing 1929, what the stock market was doing in 1929 versus what it's doing today. And they're very, very, it's strong. It's, you're never going to have get a perfect fit. But if you, and I don't have the most current chart. The chart I have is about 2 weeks old, but the stock market has gone up. It's reaching new records. And if you look at the chart, that's exactly what happened in 1929. But starting in October, and I have a copy of a newspaper, the Brooklyn Daily Eagle, whose headline is Wall Street in Panic as Stock Crash. I believe that was October 25th. Can't read it offhand. Well, let me see if I can get it. Yeah, no, excuse me. It was October 24th. I was close, 1929. And that was a Thursday. And we did have a crash. We're not there yet. But I think we're definitely going to have another recession. The question is, how bad is it going to be, and will it be caused by a financial crash? I think it will be. I've been scratching my head. You see, what's happening right now is the Fed is gradually what's called tapering, cutting back the amount of government bonds it is purchasing in the open market to finance the Treasury or the federal government. To make it very, very clear, because I know some of you may not be clear about this, The federal government has been running massive deficits, and when they run massive deficits to pay the bills, they have to issue debt, and they do that by selling primarily treasury notes, but it could be bills, notes, or bonds, but it's primarily notes, 10-year notes. They have different maturities, but it's primarily 10-year treasury notes. And they need to do that. That's the only way they can pay the bills, because if you take all the taxes, they're still short at least $500 billion on a yearly basis, somewhere between $500 billion and $600 trillion plus. So about 35% of every dollar that the U.S. is spending today has to be paid out of the receipts that the Treasury gets from selling those Treasury securities. Now, in normal times, who buys Treasury securities? Primarily financial institutions. That can be capital management or investment companies, insurance companies, banks, as well as the central banks of other countries. and people around the world, individuals as well. However, when the interest rates are much lower than what people really demand for in terms of a yield or interest, in other words, they want a much higher risk premium, what the Fed has been doing is intervening in that market by being a buyer, a heavy buyer, of these various auctions. Every day, the business day, not on a holiday, it's not on a Sunday, but every business day, the federal government, the U.S. Department of the Treasury, is auctioning off Treasury securities to pay the bills. That's what they do. And the Fed has been not a lender of last resort, but a buyer of first resort. And they've been doing this. It's called quantitative easing. They did it quantitative easing 1, 2, and 3. This is the third edition, if you will. And they've announced, and they are gradually, they were buying about $85 billion, but because the deficit has gone down, the need for the federal government to borrow money has gone down. So they're gradually tapering it. So by the end of the year, they will not be a buyer of Treasury securities. I mean, that's the plan. Now, what could stop that plan is if we go into another recession, which I think we are about to go into. And should we go into another recession, then they will start doing again. They're printing money. They're creating money. Now, most of it sits as excess reserves on the balance sheet of the Fed. What's happening is, while banks have made loans, they have some loans. They're not vigorously making loans. In other words, a lot of their reserves are just sitting there. Now, they are engaged in a certain amount of speculation. That's a subject for another story. But my point is this. What needs to be done is the Federal Reserve has to sell, not buy, and not taper, but sell over $3 trillion, $3 trillion, over $3,000 billion of Treasury securities. Now, they're not going to do it in a year or two or five. It's probably going to take them at least 10 to 15 or 20 years to do it. That's the so-called exit strategy. What has happened because of this quantitative easing is the balance sheet of the Federal Reserve has gone from roughly $800 billion of assets to over $3 trillion. And the assets are what? They're Treasury securities. To make it a little clear, what the Federal Reserve does to pay for the Treasury bonds, it issues Treasury notes. Now, they don't actually print it. It's done at a keyboard into a database. But what happens is the U.S. government gets a credit, which it can use. It's like a credit into your checking account that can be used by, in this case, the federal government to pay its bills. And what happens is when they pay their bills in these Treasury notes, whoever they're paying it to deposits it in their commercial bank. So that's what's going on. Now, the problem is, if we go into a recession, what is going to cause the recession? That's sort of the $64,000 question. What is going to be the next crisis? What's going to cause the next crisis? It could be war. That's one of the reasons I led with what's happening in the Ukraine. In this case, I don't think we're going to go in the Ukraine. I'm more and more concerned about Syria. Because last time I thought, I truly believed we were on the brink of World War III. And it could be a nuclear war because the allies of Syria are Russia, Iran, and China, and North Korea. And that is not a good combination. And they're much closer to Syria than we are. But cooler heads prevailed, and we somewhat dodged that bullet, or Barack Obama has. That was... Remember, that's when he was saying the red line. You can't cross the red line. He kept on redrawing that red line. And what prevented it was Syria agreeing, at least in principle, whether or not they're going to do it is an entirely different situation, of deactivating these chemical and, to a lesser extent, biological weapons. The problem is, that's a very dangerous process, and it takes a lot of time, even in the best of circumstances. And what we're having in Syria is a civil war that's going on as we speak. And the United States really should not, again, intervene in Syria. Because we don't want to be shipping arms to the Syrian rebels, many of them, if not the majority of them, who are al-Qaeda related or really have no love for the United States. That would be the last thing we should be doing. Yet apparently that was the plan. I don't know where it stands now. I think the arms are still being shipped, although it's not getting as much attention. It hasn't been as transparent as Secretary Hagel would like the Russians to be. I just wish this administration was a lot more transparent as what was happening in Benghazi. Because what was happening in Benghazi, that was a CIA covert operation where we were shipping arms to who? Syrian rebels. Out of the weapons caches that Gaddafi had piled up across the nation. The problem is some of the bad guys got a hold of those weapons and turned them on the United States, and four U.S. citizens, including our ambassador, were killed. But that was a CIA operation that was involved with the accumulation of weapons and their transshipment first to Turkey and then into Syria. So the Syrian rebels could fight against Assad in Syria, the current regime there. You haven't heard much about that. And the people that really know what was going on were the CIA employees as well as contractors that were in Benghazi. They haven't testified yet, a year later. And the reason is they're not only the president, but you have people in Congress, both in the House and the Senate, Democrats and Republicans, that simply do not want the spotlight turned on what we were doing, what the United States was doing in Syria. And that was in accumulating arms, including surface-to-air missiles, as well as recruiting fighters to go to Syria and engage in the civil war. That's what hasn't come out. That is the scandal of Benghazi that has not been confirmed, certainly not denied, but has not been confirmed. It really can't be denied because we had a compound. It's called the CIA Annex there, a warehouse storing these weapons for eventual shipment, either through by ship. Remember, Benghazi's on the coast, as well as freighters, airliners, to Turkey, and then to be transshipped or transported into Syria. Now back to what's going to cause it. I don't think it's going to be war. I really don't. I think what you're on the verge of, Europe is on the brink of another recession. There's overall, the European Union has close to zero growth rate. If they go into another recession, I think this will definitely tip the United States into a recession. Even though exports are a much smaller percentage of our GDP compared to a country like Germany, who is an export power, the last thing Europe needs is another recession. Because if we go into another recession, you're going to have more and more bank failures there, and there's a strong interrelationship between U.S. banks and European banks. I don't try to forecast what day or month or even year it's going to happen. I'm not a very good forecaster, but we're overdue for another recession. I think it'll last at least 9 to 12 months, and it could be really worse than the 2008 recession. That even though we started to have a declining growth rate in the last quarter of 2007, most of the layoffs occurred in the latter part of 2008 and the first part of 2009. However, since July of 2009, the economy has been growing. Now, the reason I wanted to talk about this strong parallel, you got to separate what's happening in the real economy versus the financial sector or Wall Street. Many times you can have a start of a recession in a Wall Street crash. Right now, we're at peak levels. We will we'll have a correction. The problem is what will cause that correction and how bad the correction will be and what in turn will be on the impact on the so-called real economy, or Main Street is another way to say it. The problem is a lot of what was going on that caused the last recession is still going on. Speculation in the future markets, in the derivative markets, are still, for all practical purposes, hardly regulated at all. We didn't really learn the lesson. I think we're going to get another repeat, and I think it might very well be a lot worse than 2008. And if that's the case, this chart might be, you can literally see it's like falling off a cliff, and that's what happened starting on October 24th, 1929. Now, we're not there yet. We got a few months, but we're going to have some economic news coming out this week, and I haven't had a chance to look at it. We have the unemployment numbers will be coming out next Friday. Those will be looked at real carefully, as well as the real GDP numbers that I think came out today. I have not had a chance to look at them, or they might be coming out tomorrow. I don't know. I really have not had time. I was really pressed. But what I wanted to warn everybody is I'm not a chartist. There are people that put out these charts, and okay, it looks similar. I understand your point. But someone else was making a bigger point. The rally that we've had in the stock market has been fed and fueled by what? An easy, accommodative monetary policy by the Federal Reserve. That is what they've been doing since the fall of 2008 with their so-called near zero interest rate policy for the federal funds rate. No one, I'm against the manipulation of prices or price and wage controls by the government. And what we're having in effect is the most important market, the market for money, being heavily manipulated and controlled by the Federal Reserve because they've arbitrarily kept interest rates low. Now, the reason why they did it is to encourage, get confidence up. And one way to get confidence up is a rising stock market. It's another bubble, folks. What caused the last financial crisis was a bubble in real estate prices. And what's causing today's bubble is in stocks, in equities. There's also speculation, I would say rampant speculation, in future contracts, in particular oil. Have you noticed how volatile your gasoline prices are? I can't help but notice because every day I pass at least one, if not two or three gas stations, and it's been going up and down, up and down, up and down. You'll know when you're in a recession, when not only the stock market crashed, but you're going to see gasoline prices plummet. We're not there yet. We're in the spike upwards. We're climbing that mountain and getting higher and higher and higher. But the $64,000 question is, what is going to throw us off that cliff? And the recovery, so-called recovery, I would say a jobless recovery, because we're over 10 to 12 million jobs, there's a gap in where we should be in terms of jobs. And the reason we have a gap is the real growth rate in the GDP has been below the historical trend of 3%. That's why it's very, very important to look at what is the real economy doing, and that is the aggregate measure of that is what has real GDP done. Because if you truly want to get a complete recovery and close that job gap, you need growth rates of 4, 5, and 6%, and that's above the trend line, and we're nowhere close. And if we go into another recession, that means two negative quarters of economic growth. That means higher unemployment rates and much lower labor participation rates. And in other words, a bubble is going to pop, and one of the bubbles that will pop are stock prices. The other will be in the speculation, excessive speculation, in future contracts. Because when you go into a recession, and if Europe goes into a recession and we go into a recession, China will go into a recession. And what's going to happen? You're going to have massive layoffs. The unemployment rate will go back up over 8, 9, and 10%. And that's not good. And that will take another 1 or 2 years. And what's going to happen? The Fed is going to reverse its policy. Is it going to happen today or tomorrow? I don't know. I will say with a high probability, it will happen in the next 2 years. Mark my words. It could happen this year or it could happen next year, but it's going to happen because we're way overdue and there's a lot of weakness across the globe. Because what is happening? Not only has the Fed been pumping money out to increase investment and fuel this bubble, but so are the central banks across the world. And what it's going to happen is there's going to be a shock, an external shock that, and I don't know where it's going to come from. I think it will be the bubble in the stock market, but there'll be other things that could cause that bubble to pop. And when it does, it's going to be several years before, well, first the recession will go on for at least 9 months to 18 months or maybe longer. And then you have you'll enter a period of recovery that probably will take another 10 years to get back to near full employment, which is 3%. So wait and see. I'm looking at the time. I need to wrap up the show, but I wanted to cover that chart. And I've sort of waited to see what was going to happen. I think in probably in the next 6 to 12 months, the bubble will pop. Even though I'm given a two-year window, I think we're approaching another major correction that might very well lead to a recession in the economy. And you got to keep the two separate. Just because you have a correction, a major correction in the stock market or in the futures, certain future contracts, doesn't mean the economy automatically goes into a recession. It depends how deep that recession is, how deep that correction is. And I've given you for information on, again, how long the bull markets have lasted and what was the correction. You get that information by going to pronkpops.wordpress.com and listening to the show, but right below those links, you'll have information not only on this story, but on the first story, the problem in the Ukraine. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Thank you for listening, and now back to the music.